Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Mother's Day is around the corner. Find the perfect gift for the mom in your life with a stunning piece of jewelry from Blue Nile. From timeless pearls to dazzling gemstones, Blue Nile has something she'll adore. Need it fast? Most items can ship overnight. Plus, enjoy guaranteed free shipping and returns. Don't miss our special Mother's Day deals. Save big on the season's most beautiful trends. For a limited time, get up to 50% off by going to BlueNile.com. That's BlueNile.com.
This is it! The time has come!
Saturday night's all right for fighting.
Push him down!
Get in the ring and go the distance with Fight Night with Gareth A. Davies.
You're better than that!
On Talk Sport.
You're listening to Fight Night on Talk Sport with me, Gareth A. Davies. Joining me this week in the studio is the Welsh boxer Barry Jones, the former WBO super featherweight champion. And we had a fantastic time. We began this week's show by talking about the retirement of former unified world champion and Olympic silver medalist Amir Khan. Finally, he'd hung up the gloves with a record of 34 wins and 6 losses.
Last week we spoke about the retirement of Cal Brook. We had him on the show last week. I did interviewed him the night before. He said, you know, his heart wasn't in it anymore. Amir Khan comes out yesterday, short statement, thanking everyone, and his career's over. What's your feelings about Amir announcing that now?
I'm happy. I'm more than happy. My biggest fear, I have said publicly, actually, that anyone involved in Amir Khan's next fight should be ashamed of themselves, including him. Because as a fighter, you don't think it's enough. But he'd shown in his last fight, and vulnerability, actually, throughout his career, even when he was good, but in the latter stage of his career, that maybe he hadn't quite got, wasn't the fight that he once was. And like, I certainly against Cal Brook, even though Cal Brook looked good, it was more to do with how bad Amir Khan looked. And I think he knew enough was enough. And I'm glad he's finished, because he's had a fantastic career. I mean, that kid's been famous since he was 17. That's a lot of pressure for anybody, for a child, and he was a child.
Oh, I know. I knew him really well then. I tell you, you know, the great thing about him for me is he's been a star from being a teenage silver medalist at the 2004 Olympic Games to becoming unified world champion. And remember, he challenged at welterweight and middleweight for the world titles again. For me as well, what he did brilliantly, and I can't remember another one in my lifetime, he was the first British Pakistani Muslim to represent that community and make a bigger resonance for his people. And there are, well, I think it's 10 million Muslims in the country. There are many, many people from that area of the world who are immigrants here, who've settled here. I think he did a lot for that group. And I've got a quote from one of my interviews from him. I've done so many interviews. I look back over my interviews on Friday for my piece in The Telegraph, and here's a great quote from him. He's lived a very public life. He said, "You get hate the day you become famous. The day you don't get hate, you're finished. I've been getting hate from the day I made it into the newspapers for the first time. The day I won the Olympic medal, it started. I never let it get to me, and I never think it's a religious or a colour thing. I just go with the flow. Because if you go to any of my fights, most of the people who buy tickets for me are British, white and fans." And I love that about Amir, that he talks like that.
But do you know what? I never took to him straight away. Why wouldn't I? Because everything about him is likeable. He's a lovely guy. He's a lovely guy. But I mean, I forget about him as a person. Just I'm only interested in his boxing ability. Yeah. But his style is what I like. He's a boxer who can punch a bit as well, you know, and everything. But I couldn't take to him, and I don't know what it was. And maybe that's what it was. And that's nothing to do with his religion, his race, or anything about that at all. It was just, I couldn't put my
Fair
finger
enough.
On it. But I that changed pretty quickly. I just seen the vulnerabilities. Now, when Willie Lamont was a really good boxer, but domestically, and he put him down. And then obviously, you know, Michael Gomez and
No, it's the Bredis Prescott he ran to the middle of the ring.
I want to say, before all those fights, no, he'd shown vulnerabilities.
There were vulnerabilities around,
And then you think, oh, good, he's going to come unstuck here. And even the, Like, even when he had the last amateur fight against Kinderland, the one they put on, which was...
Well, he lost to him in the Olympic final, and then it was a setup to make him look good. Yeah, exactly.
I think things like that were out of his control... made you think, oh, that's they brought this Cuban over here just to get beat on purpose. Like, whatever happens, he's not winning. And you knew that. And maybe that was the thing. But for me, the way he's conducted himself in his career, the way he's gone face first into every challenge makes him one of Britain's greatest boxers. It does.
He's
not in the top 10 of all-time greats. But, I mean, one of them, to be in the... Again, and it wasn't just the Olympics. He won a European, university or student gold medal, then he won a world junior championship, then he wins the Olympics.
Yeah. Well, he was going to fight for Pakistan originally in the Olympics because they said he was too young. You know, the old suits were on the blazers in those days.
Yeah.
It's a bit different now with Rob McCracken and the English Institute of Sport, and the setup is extraordinary. The best in the world, people say.
Of course.
But in those times, Amir consulted boxing for Pakistan. We almost lost him because they said he was too young.
Well, bear in mind, he goes to the Olympics on his own, by the way.
Yeah.
Like a child, 17 years of age child, on his own, no other teammates to help him out. And he goes in and he produces that, and he loses to a Cuban great in the final. No, he's had a fantastic career, and he's earned a tank full of money, and he deserves every penny of it because he's earned it. He hasn't been given anything, that kid. And I'm happy he's retired, and he needs to go out there now and just enjoy his life. He's got a lovely family. He's a lovely man, and I think he'd be involved in other ways in the sport for sure.
I think he's elite level offensively, but he was never elite level defensively as a boxer. And I think that's where
I don't think he was.
I think he was elite.
I think he had.
He wasn't a world champion for 10 years, but he was relevant still.
He's a world class fighter in every shape and form. Yeah, and he had
world or elite.
Well, world should mean elite. I don't subscribe to this elite stuff. If you're a world champion, you're a world champion. I know being a world champion doesn't make you world class. That's the difference. That's what I would say.
That's what I mean.
He's been world class. Yeah. But I do think that he had one of the fastest combination punches there's been. But it was blind speed. And that's why when people talk about Mayweather, he've always beat him because good timing doesn't beat speed.
Calm would have looked good for four rounds against
I don't think
Mayweather.
He would have. I think, see, good timing doesn't beat speed. Good timing beats blind speed. And that's what Amir Khan did. He had blind speed. And that's why he got hurt and caught and knocked out in times, because he would just commit because he thought that speed would just fluster everybody. And when it didn't, that's when he got
Marcos
hurt.
Maidana,
Danny Garcia was a perfect example when he got caught throwing.
But Marcos Maidana in the fight with Khan had shown that if you punch with Khan, that you had more opportunity, and that's what Garcia did
it was blind speed. It wasn't fast. He had fast hands, but it wasn't thought out combinations. But just it wasn't educated blind speed. It was just naturally gifted. But he was great to watch and committed, and talk about fighter going out on a shield. Easy epitome of that.
Absolute pleasure covering the career of Amir Khan. Well, next up, a young star making his way in the sport, 25-year-old Conor Benn joined us. Will it be Jose Ramirez next? We spoke to him. Here's what he had to say. Jose Ramirez, who fought Josh Taylor for the undisputed super lightweight title last year in Las Vegas. Is that a fight that you fancy?
Oh, of course it is. You know, Ramirez, Keith Thurman, all of them names I want. You know, it is a shame that there's nothing on the line for the Ramirez fight, considering his last fight was for the undisputed unification. But, you know, I'm confident in my ability to beat all of them. So, you know, it's just leave that with my team and leave it with them to get it sorted.
Here in the UK, because obviously Eddie Hearn's got loads of events going on in America, but are you expecting it to be here in the summer?
Well, I'm here in July the 9th for the O2, but...
Is that an exclusive?
It could be later on in the year, but, you know, I'd like to keep it here for the supporters. You know, I fought in London with a crowd for, a good 3-4 years.
That's a very exciting matchup of styles. Barry's nodding his head here at that opponent. He was licking his lips there. It's one that would create a lot of action because Ramirez is an all-action fighter.
Yeah, of course he is. And, you know, so am I. You know, I always bring it. And, you know, I always deliver. You know, his only loss comes to Taylor. So, you know, those really are the sort of fights I want. And, you know, it's my team's job to make these fights materialise.
Good fight at this stage, Barry.
Yeah, it's I think not the problem. The problem, also the gift that Conor has, is every fighter now in his division, from literally number one to number 15, are all quality opposition. But he's there now.
Shark infested waters, basically, welterweight.
But he's one of the sharks now, and he is, and he's proved that. And forget about who he's beating; it's the way he's beating him, and that's the most impressive part. The way he beat Algeria, that could have been anyone in the ring. He was punch perfect, used the jab, all the things people said he couldn't do. Couldn't box. He was just aggressive. Couldn't box. But he jabbed a guy who's known to have a good jab and a good boxing brain, and he'll thwart him and outthwart him. And I think that's the important part. Now he is ready. People are still saying, but he's only 25. He's 25. He's ready now. And it might be a really difficult weight, but for me the Jose fight there, for me Ramirez, is a guy who will come at you, who fights with throws lots of punches and physically strong. As a super lightweight, as a welterweight, still improving yet. And I think that stylistically is a fantastic fight.
Is Barry singing from your hymn sheet?
What do you mean?
Well, saying that basically every fighter you've got now is a shark in that division from 1 to 15.
Yeah, literally,
everyone
top 10. You can say top 15 are all dangerous fighters. It's a matter of inches, centimetres between, all of them, really. And it really does come down to who really gets it right on the night, whose preparation has been better. Because as of skill and power and speed, accuracy, timing, it all really does play a factor in the welterweight division. But I've been working hard for the past 6 years to get myself top ranked, top five in every governing body. Three in the IBF, three in the WBO and the WBC. So, I'm really there. Do you know what I mean? And, I'm really ready for it, to be honest. So whether they put in front of me, whether it's July 9th or later on in the year, I'll make sure I'm ready.
I thought Chris Van Heerden would give Conor a bigger challenge.
No, I didn't, to be honest.
No.
No, I didn't. I think that it was one of those fights where he was going to get criticised, whatever happened.
Yeah.
But he did. Everyone expecting him to blast him
out
there.
You know what, Barry?
But you did it.
The only thing was he rarely gets stopped, and he was a southpaw.
Mm.
So we did expect him to maybe give me some sort of test in terms of him being southpaw. But that was the only... Because all the top welterweights in the welterweight division, the top ones are southpaw. So, we'll get a southpaw in there, and it just turns out to be an easy night's work. All these past, four or five fights, which each of them presented something different in terms of different challenges, all have been my easiest night's work. I had harder fights early on in my career.
Yeah.
So it's like, how are they trying to gauge it, whereas I'm saying, listen, I'm ready for X, Y, Z, so let's make these fights happen. Do you know what I mean? I'm now top five for a reason. And I believe I need to be fighting people in the top 10.
No, you do. And for me, the most important thing for your career is how busy you've been. And I think at your age and the momentum you have right now, staying busy is so important for you. And you're doing that. And I go back to the Algeria fight, because I thought that, for me, was people will always say, oh, Algeria was past his best and blah, 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 all that sort of stuff. But that was irrelevant to me. The performance that you put on that night
was perfect.
Do
you know what, Barry? People say, oh, yeah, they're past it. They're past it until they're not past it.
Yeah, of course.
Do you know what I mean? What about Kiko Martinez? What about, everyone was saying, oh, he's past it. When Mayweather beat Pacquiao and he was past it, and then he come back and absolutely smashed everyone up.
Joe Karzaghi beat Bernard Hopkins, and then Hopkins went on to beat a load of fighters.
That's what I'm saying. So they're past it until they're not past it. But what I'm saying is I'm not going to listen to the public and think my opponents are past it and then maybe lack in training and then, have that upset that loads of fighters get because they listen to the public or, they think they're in for an easy, nice work. I don't train like that. I train as if Van Heerden could bring me the world of trouble. I train as if he could, be my world title fight, which he is, And I go out there and I keep telling everyone, it's not like I'm saying he's a world beater. I'm going in there to show what he is. I ain't going to have tune-up fights and, have hard nights work for him. I want to show that they're tune-up fights.
Can I ask you, you're going to be watching one of your rivals in the division, Yaron Ennis, 28-0, 26 KOs against up against Custio Clayton on the undercard of Jermell Charlo and Brian Castaño 2 tonight in Carson, California. Be up watching that or not?
What time is it on?
Oh, well, it'll be late, won't it? It'll be about 4 or 5 in the morning.
But it's free on YouTube.
But free on YouTube. Set the alarm. Watch the fight. Go for an early morning run.
You know
Come
what?
On,
I didn't even
Connor.
I didn't even do that for the Canelo fight.
Did you watch it, though?
I did watch it, yeah.
What did you think?
I think Craig, I'm commentating on that day, so I think Craig just really needs to take a lot of confidence from that. Do you know what I mean? I think Bivol just really stuck to his guns and done what he needed to do. You know, he done what he needed to do, and he just really showed discipline, and you could really tell what a disciplined fighter he was in sticking to the game plan and the strategy.
Look, before we let you go tonight, I expect you to watch that fight early in the morning and go for a run, though. Come on, Connor. You're slaying.
listen, I'm just
you're enjoying by the pool like... too much. You probably had a barbecue and a bit too much in you today, didn't you?
I had some fish and chips, though, earlier as it happened.
Were you down on the seafront?
I wasn't. No, I wasn't. I was just chilling at home.
Do you remember that day in lockdown when I bumped into you in Victoria and in Southend on sea?
What, and I had the Rossi ice cream in my hand?
You did.
I did, but I just finished the run, though, so, you know, I burnt it off.
You did indeed. Look, a week ago, I spoke to Cal Brook and he retired when I interviewed him. Amir Khan retired yesterday. What's your thoughts on their retirement? Did you retire them, do you think?
No. Listen, I was the only fight there for them both if they did want to fight.
Correct.
But, you know, people saying, oh, they're ducking me and all that. And they're not ducking me. Maybe they don't want to fight me, yeah, but they're not ducking me. Do you know what I mean? So I'm not going to go around and claim like, oh, yeah, no, they're ducking me. It's not nothing like that. But would they want to fight me now? They have everything to lose and not really much to gain. You know, so listen, they've achieved everything they wanted to in the sport of boxing, every young fighter can dream of achieving. So listen, take my hats off to them, and you know, they're the best of this era in terms of their era of British worldweight boxing.
Yeah, kind words and the best words, and I think they've both gone out at the right time, and it's always Agreed. Good to see two guys get the fight they both wanted, or maybe Kel wanted it more than Amir showing very little left. Well, he's got heart, cojones, stamina, all those things, but no legs. And that's the sign, isn't it?
And the irony, we couldn't get them two together, and then they left together.
Yeah, and then they
For
left
years
together
we couldn't get together. They fight and they leave together. The symmetry's amazing.
When I spoke to Kel a week ago, and we heard it on Fight Night last week, Kel rang me and said, look, I'm going to retire. Do you want to do a piece? And that was before we went to New York. And he said, look, my heart's not in it anymore, baby. You know, and that's it. And if your heart's not in it...
He doesn't talk like that, but that's...
No, but he doesn't. He's not from Glasgow, no. But the funny thing is, it's 12 weeks since that fight. 11 weeks when he made the decision, 12 weeks when Amir made the decision. Do you think, though, final one, Connor, that maybe Kel retiring made Amir think about it as well?
I don't know, because how would it be if Amir Khan got knocked out again? You know, via me, it's just that one fight too many.
I just think Amir might have... If Kel had offered him a rematch, I think he might have stayed. That's all I'm trying to suggest.
I don't think so. I think there's loads of injuries going on throughout his training camp, as well as, you know, after, obviously. And during the fight, he had injuries. So, you know, I don't think there was any way he could even see for a training camp, even if he wanted to.
I'm happier that... Can retire, but I think Brook. No, I think he's had his day, but I think there's one more fight left in him.
Mm. Yeah,
there wasn't in Can, and that's the one.
Yeah.
But I didn't want to see Connor beat Kel Brook up either.
He's not a fan. He's not a fan, Con. I want you to see him beat everyone.
Yeah,
I want to see you beat everyone. Gareth doesn't want to see you win.
When Connor was working the broadcast with us on Calm Brook, I said before the fight that I thought Connor would probably beat Kel in six, but then. After the fight, I had to wind Connor up by telling him I think Kel beats him at the moment. And Connor was nearly up and into the...
Gareth, you know what? I mean, you can get away with it.
Well, our thanks to Connor Benn there for joining us on the show this week. And we look forward to his next fight, whoever it's going to be. Well, last week, of course, Saul Canelo Alvarez de Jalisco, Tijuana, Mexico, lost
in his bid to win the WBA light heavyweight title against Russian champion Dmitry Bivol. Barry and I picked over the bones of that fight and what Bivol did right and what Canelo did wrong.
How good was Dmitry Bivol last weekend to beat Saul Canelo Alvarez, to hand him only a second defeat in his 62 fights? A guy that is widely considered number one pound for pound in the world. Maybe that's changed this week. We'll discuss that in a minute. Ring Magazine have got him at 4 or 5 now, or 6, I think. And who commands $50 million a fight. How good did Bivol have to be last weekend to stop this guy who's come up from light middleweight with world titles all the way up to light heavyweight?
Yeah, well, originally he was a welterweight, wasn't he, before he started
boxing?
He was
a welterweight. I saw his first fight in Vegas. Miguel Cotto's brother.
Yeah, Jose Cotto.
I can't remember his Don. I can't remember his promoter, an old promoter from California who discovered him. Don Chargin, who's dead now. Do you remember John Chargin?
No, I do not know.
An amazing guy. He discovered him for Golden Boy. He saw him as a 14-year-old dipping and throwing that left hook to the body that he throws so brilliantly, the cinnamon one. And he said, go and watch this red-haired kid. He's Mexican. He looks Irish.
Yeah.
And I went to see him. And it was on the undercard of Mayweather and someone, or Pacquiao and someone.
Like that,
We were there. You were there as well. Yeah. I went to see him as a one man and his dog at that time in the MGM. And that smattering of crowd. He got hit by about 15 right crosses in the first round.
Yeah, he did, yeah.
But he came back to stop Cotto in about the 10th round or something.
He was vulnerable, but he was learning. He was a boy, and he was learning his trade. And he has been one of the most adaptable fighters. And I say this with every fight that he's had, he's taken something from that, learned from it, and took it into the next fight. And he did that for a long time. He sort of stopped, though, and I've said this has been my sort of go-to thing. He takes everything, he learns from the fight, from the last fight, takes it into the next one, makes him a better fighter, or like a superpower. He takes something from you and makes him bigger and better and stronger. But he hasn't probably done that since maybe Callum Smith, maybe before. He's just literally recently, because it's always worked for him, brute strength.
Yeah.
Because no, his reputation precedes him. So you know.
Invincible.
You know how good he is. You know he hits hard. So you're going in there with a perceived panic. And so when he hits you, you go, oh, there it is. I'm expecting this. And then you're afraid to throw. So, and what he does poorly, Canelo, and there's very few things he does poorly. I thought Canelo was going to win the fight. I thought he was going to win quite easily as well, by the way.
I thought he was going to win.
I was 100% wrong, and I don't care if I'm wrong, because it's very rarely happened. No, but honestly, look, I honestly thought that what Canelo does, he beats you up. And then if he doesn't really, if you're defending reasonably well, he walks away and then comes back again with another assault. Now, that's your opportunity to jump on him. But you don't, because that's your chance to also escape, because he just pummeled you on the ropes, even if you are defending quite well. But what Bivol did, because of the size, and also he didn't panic under pressure, Bivol. That was the most important factor. When Canelo took a step off, Bivol went at him with long, straight shots. He never closed the gap when he was attacking. But then, so when Canelo was taking that rest to step back, he just went, oh, I'm going to come up with you off the ropes. And he worked him back onto the ropes himself. And that was clever. He couldn't have done it without the physical size. But that's just one of the things he had in his... That's just one of his strengths that he had. That you can use that why Canelo got beat, though it was a factor, because Canelo's choice is to move up to weight.
Funnily enough, you know, like you say, all of that is spot on. I absolutely agree with you. But there's that old adage in boxing that there's weight divisions for a reason, and there are weight divisions for a reason. There are sizes of people for a reason. And, you know, size and strength and speed means power, and it means being able to absorb things. But also, weirdly, the way Bivol fought Canelo, he made him look sluggish, didn't he?
Now all of a sudden you go, well, actually, Canelo dictates the pace always, and
if he can bully,
well, he always can,
but he wasn't able to here.
No, and
because he met,
though he actually he was.
You said it perfectly. Every time Canelo started to look to load, Bivol hit him with a quick jab. And every time Canelo slowed to reset, Bivol went on the attack.
And also, he caught and countered, which is when you throw a left hook, you block with the right hand. And rather than throw a left hook yourself, which most people will do, you catch the left hook with your right hand and then throw the right hand that he just hit off.
And he also took a lot on the arms and he didn't care, did he?
Well, because he was naturally big and he could absorb it. And that's just what it was. No, that was a factor, but still...
Can you score when you hit the arms you don't?
No, of course you can. No.
No, but people were debating for Canelo to saying he hit his arms a lot.
It's a tactic to wear somebody down.
Exactly.
But it's a tactic to get success later on in the fight. So it's like, you know, making a fighter work hard and giving away the early rounds. Like this is a Joe Gallagher sort of technique, which
Gallagher.
The box fighters he's had over the years, he'd wouldn't worry too much, but he wouldn't panic about the early rounds. Just make that fighter work harder than he wants to work.
Yeah.
Because you have that great engine that he instills into him, and then the tactics and the pressure will show by round 5, 6, 7, 8.
So you're talking Callum Smith and Quigg, and it was
massively effective.
Yeah.
Not always, but most of the time. Mm. So when you're dictating the pace, you're in charge of it. But Canelo actually doesn't box at a high pace ever.
Mm.
Now, he probably needs to do up the pace a little bit more to make Bivol panic, and he just couldn't do it. But the size was a factor. But either way, Bivol would look fantastic, and it was a fantastic performance because he didn't go into the lion's den. He went into Canelo's front living room, pretty much. He went into his house.
It was fascinating, wasn't it, that Tim Weisman, Dave Moretti, and Steve Weisfeld all scored it identically. First four rounds for Canelo, and then one round of the last eight for Canelo, and the other seven all the way to the end for Bivol. I thought, and 10-10 rounds are disgusting, I know, but...
No, they're not.
But the first four rounds, it was 4 a.m, I was here, I wasn't in Vegas, you probably were, and I didn't see it live, in terms of live in person. I found it really hard to score the first four rounds. Yeah, but really hard to score
but
them.
The difference is hard to score. The 10-10 rounds are not disgusting. If you can't find a definite winner...
They were so close, those first four rounds, though, weren't they?
But what I'm saying, if a judge can't find a definite winner, he can't just give it to him. Because that would have a massive effect later down in the fight. If rounds are close or no rounds are clear.
Yeah.
So you have to. So if you can give a definite winner, you have to give it a 10-10 round. That's why the option's there. I would say.
But the judges all were identical. How did you have it?
I had Bivol was massive. Like,
he was
8-4-9-3. Yeah, 8-4-9-3. See, we're saying 8-4-9-3 because we're watching it at home. We're watching. We're not. Our scorecard has no effect, so we can say 8-4-9-3. They can't say that. They have to make a stand. Now, the fact that they all had the same scorecard,
I think, is a good thing, isn't it?
Good and bad. It's good that they're doing what they're told to do, but the fact that their scorecards meant that if Canelo would have won that last round,
I know it would have been a
draw. The fight's a draw.
Oh, yeah, exactly.
Makes I feel I've been sick in my own mouth. It's disgusting because like if Bivol would have got robbed.
Did you not see that as a potential outcome? Because this is what happened. Look what happened.
For me, this
was the first live opponent for him. Like, really live opponent, I'm talking now. The chance of him losing since Golovkin in 2017.
Was it though?
Since he fought Gennady Golovkin in 2017. This was the toughest challenge since that then. And that fight he lost, 7-5 or 8-4. Canelo lost that fight. Yeah. It wasn't a draw. The scoring that night was disgusting. Yeah. 118-110 to Canelo.
Oh, well, that's literally...
Adelaide Bird. Yeah. I mean, Dave Moretti...
He calls it anti-Adelaide. But he must do because I was obviously working that night for doing the commentary for UK TV, and it was just a great performance from Golovkin, I thought.
Yeah.
But either way, I do think there's worry that they obviously score on the fight in the right criteria they needed. But what are they looking for? We need to know this as an audience, what judges are looking for. Then we can decide whether they're doing their job right or wrong. And I've been saying this for a long time. We should know, the public should be made aware, boxing fans, what the criteria is for scoring a round. But forget all that. Bivol boxed fantastic.
He did.
He boxed a superstar in his backyard and beat him.
There's a thing that goes on in boxing, and we saw it with Josh Taylor against Jack Catterall a few months back. There is favouritism, and I think it's psychological. And I think that's what happens with a fighter like Canelo. Judges are human, and they read how supernatural this guy is, how invincible he is. And I think we're going to have to go to break in a minute, and I want to ask you this. Do you think they'll fight a rematch? Do you think they'll fight it at super middleweight rather than light heavyweight? Or do you think Canelo will have a break now and fight Golovkin in September and maybe go back to Bivol later?
Canelo's got nothing to prove because he's been a great fighter, so he should fight. He should fight Golovkin. It's a great fight that he wins, I think, as well. But I think he'll want the Bivol fight.
At 168 at 12 stone at super middleweight rather than light heavyweight.
If he's clever, though, I don't like it. No. Again, there's a lassie taste in your mouth. But if he's clever, he'll make Bivol.
Well, why shouldn't he? Bivol's not a giant man. It's not a bad thing to ask.
But why should Bivol go down? He's going down because Canelo still is the draw financially. And again, it's not.
If Bivol fights him, he gets $25 million, and he also becomes the undisputed super middleweight champion as well.
But he won't if he has a boiled on. I'm a lover of the sport, not chasing the money, and that's what it's. That's what it is, and the fact that whoever's the king financially dictates the sport.
The world's like that, my friend.
Not my world.
Well, next up, we spoke to a light heavyweight who fights this week against Craig Richards in an all-British clash, which is of vital importance. A crossroads fight for both men. Joshua Boatse, 15-0. Next fight, Craig Richards, this Saturday night. Here's what Joshua had to tell us.
There's been a good reception about it, which is good. But yeah, I think it's an opponent that people are like, yeah, good opponent. Boatse, good opponent. Let's see how it folds up. So I'm looking forward to it, Gareth, you know. It's a good challenge and I'm open to challenges, so it'll be a good scrap.
And the other thing about it is, since the weekend, Craig's performance against Bivol is in more perspective. I spoke to Craig about that probably a week and a half ago, going into the Bivol Canelo fight. And, you know, he put up a pretty good show against Bivol, kind of an early chance for a world title. We know what you can do. We know that we're highly critical of you. It's so incredible. I find myself being highly critical of you, and yet you haven't put a foot wrong. It's quite interesting, isn't it? We have very high expectations of you. You must feel that from everyone.
No, there's high expectations everywhere, Gareth, and there's pressure. But I've always said that the pressure from the outside is not greater than the one that I put on myself. So I end up controlling the pressures. And I think even in the face of his spider, I was saying that the media stuff, I log out of it. I might see what a few are saying, but for what the masses are saying, it's irrelevant, you know? And that's how I managed to stay in my own lane, keep my sanity, do what I got to do and live my normal life. You know, it's cool, like, it's nice, you know? But yeah, there's expectations everywhere, but keep winning, keep putting my foot at the right places. That's all that matters.
Yeah, I mean, for one's own, like you say, sanity or mental health, as they call it, mental well-being these days, you just don't want... this strain, this super highway of, you know, from idiocy to clever views on it all. It just doesn't do anything, does it? At the end of the day, it doesn't do anything. Yeah.
Oh man, you got to stay in your own lane, Gareth. And they say, stay in your own lane. There's no traffic. Why? Because you just breeze through or you cruise, isn't it? But yeah, man, that it's a big fight that I'm looking forward to. An important fight, as I've said many times now, and we're just over a week away, so we're almost there.
Have you got to be busier than you usually are? Have you got to be the best Joshua Boatse? Have you got to take it to him? I mean, the styles is a very interesting matchup. You're both very languid in the way you fight. You both have gears. You're both big men at 175 and naturally big men who are not boiling down in weight. He might have to boil a little bit more than you, I think, maybe a little bit, but it's so intriguing. That's what's so great about it. And, you know, it's just fascinating from a purist perspective. It's a fascinating fight.
Yeah, I mean, to answer that, you're right. There's so many questions. What style do I come out with? What style does he come out with? Am I going to box? Is he going to box? Is he going to fight? And I think that's why we all love boxing, because we can make all these assumptions, but we never know till the bell goes. But as I say, Gareth, whatever style I need to present to win, that's what I'm going to have to do. You know, and I've covered all kinds of styles, but you know, I know what I have to do to win, you know, and I've prepared very hard for it. And on 21st, that's what we look to do.
Well, from one light heavyweight to another light heavyweight, Ben Whittaker, the light heavyweight silver medalist for the Tokyo Olympic Games, joined us this week. And here's what he had to tell me about why he turned pro with Boxer and Sky Sports, and why Sugar Hill Steward, yep, the very same Sugar Hill Steward who trains Tyson Fury, will be in his corner.
It's been a crazy whirlwind, to be honest. I think I was a man in demand, and it's a privilege to be in that position. It was humbling to be in that position, but I just made the right decision for me and my family. You know, the first thing first, I got a good lawyer, good accountant, good management team. And we just went with Boxer because I just felt like he was the right fit for me.
Why and how Sugar Hill Steward then? I mean, I think it's a great addition. Obviously, the Kronk Jimp style, the, you know, kill or not be killed, the explosive hands. Presumably, that's to add to your silky skills as a boxer.
100%, you hit the nail on the head there. Everybody knows me as a beautiful. Hit and not get hit is the game, but the entertaining sport, they want to see knockouts now. And I've always grew up on the Kronk style. I really love Tommy Hearns, Gerald McLennan, those type of fighters. And I was just doing my homework, really. I was going to different gyms, trying different coaches. And there was all great coaches, but it just wasn't the fit for me. And I thought, what do I actually need to add to my game? I need to add a knockout. I need to bring a teacher involved. And Sugar Hill ticked all those boxes. So it's a great partnership.
So we'll probably be seeing you doing a bit of body sparring if Tyson Fury comes back.
Something like that. But I'll tell Sugar to keep his top on as well. He's moving a bit wild with that.
It's funny. No, and it's come at the right time because Tyson Fury, we all believe he'll come back for the fight to fight for the undisputed title. But you can get a lot of care and attention. It's not like you're sharing him with Tyson Fury at the moment.
It's not a bad man to share him with because I'm sure I'd pick up some knowledge. But like you said, I'm in a really good position where some gyms I went to, there's a bit too many fighters. So would I get that time I needed? Where at the moment, I think I'm only with Sugar's fighter now. So what a great position to be in, and he'll give me all his attention and care. So I can't really, he's fell in the right place for me at the right time.
And where will that be? Will that be here or will you be over in the States? Where will you train together mainly?
Yeah, I got the best of both worlds. So he's based in Miami and Las Vegas. So I wouldn't mind going out there with the son. But for my first fights, he's coming over to Birmingham. So I'll take him round. I'm the mayor of Wolverhampton, so I'm sure he'll be looked after fairly.
So the last bits of your amateur career, I loved your comments at the Olympics. It pains me to say it to you because you'll probably have an expression on your face. You won silver. But you said, actually, no, you don't. You lose gold. Like, silver is first, second, basically.
100%, 100%. I think that's a great statement as well. It's that a lot of people wanted me to change what I said, but truthfully, that's how I feel. I'm a winner at heart, and boxers, we go into that ring to win. If you go in there to lose, you're in the wrong sport. So I think that mindset and intent I have, if I keep that with me, I'm sure I'll go far.
So do you think you'll always look back on your Olympic career with disappointment then?
It's bittersweet, truthfully, if I'm honest, because of course you're looking back, Olympic silver medal. It's not bad. If you look at it, Amir Khan's done it, Roy Jones has done it, the list can go on. But for me, just who I am, I always want one better for myself. So it's bittersweet. But that the Olympic silver has given me this platform. It's given the people who didn't know me, they know me now. So it's one of those. But I'm a winner. So actually, no, I'll do. I'll get some gold spray paint and paint myself and we'll make it a gold medal.
You've got a massive opportunity now, obviously. Yeah, I mean, the huge fanfare for you turning pro, a lot of interest, lots of pressure as well, maybe.
There's pressure in all walks of life, but as a boxer, as a person with the limelight on him, you have to rise to that occasion. And I'm pretty, if you see me in the Olympics, not many people knew me, but I thought this is my chance to shine. I walked to the ring, I was dancing to the ring. I'm made for that type of scene. So I'm excited to go, and I do like my diamonds. I like my diamond watches and things, so pressure makes diamonds.
Great division to be in, 175 pounds, not just globally. Obviously, Bivol with a fantastic performance at the weekend against Canelo Alvarez, Artur Beterbiev, Joe Smith. But then we've got over here, I'm not going to ask you about it in a minute, Joshua Boatse, Craig Richards, Callum Johnson, Callum Smith, Adan Aziz, I'm forgetting someone here, Anthony Yards, Lyndon Arthur. Obviously, they're going to move you through the ranks quickly, and you know, you're not going to be fighting those guys within five fights. It's probably going to be more likely 10. But within a year and a half, one or two of those guys are probably going to start being on the resume. You'll want to prove you're the king of the lions over here.
You want to prove that you're the top dog. And like you said, it's what a time to be a light heavyweight.
Yeah,
I remember back in the day, if someone mentioned light heavyweight, it's one of those weights where who's there really? It was Adonis Stevenson used to just run the weight, and he was pretty boring to me, to be honest. But it's a situation where domestically it's very hard, world level it's very hard, and I'm excited to go in there.
It's, everyone it's has their opinion. Thing how they bring you through now. It's because it's, you know, they find the right matches always. So when are you going to be out for the first time?
All I can do is just make sure I'm working hard in the gym. But I'm scheduled for July, I'm sure. Early July, so I'm sure that'll be my first one. And activity is key for me, so I want to be out as much as possible. Hopefully, 5 to 6 fights this year, and that's where I'll be learning. And the more my face is out there, the more I'm learning. The ring walks, taking in the crowd, it'll only make me more comfortable when I do get to the pinnacle of fights.
So, Barry, what do you think about the teaming up with Sugar Hill Stewart? What can he do for Ben Whittaker? He's a very fluid, very comfortable boxer.
I think he needs to instill some confidence in the kicker. He clearly lacks confidence. He's full of it, isn't he?
Absolutely, full of it.
But that's what, when he won the silver medal, and he deemed it losing the gold, didn't he? And I understand that. And I understand why people weren't happy with his approach about that.
I think it was a great thing to say.
I'm not quite sure. I'm a bit 50-50 with it all. But what I do say is that he has that winner's mindset that you just can't give people that. I mean, we all want to be winners, but it's different. I would see that as a massive success. I would be crying in the ring if I was me when I lost the Olympic final. But I would be ecstatic an hour later that I got a silver medal.
Mm.
And he just didn't. And that's a mindset you can't teach people.
No.
And that'll be such a real plus going forward. So I think the Sugar Hill matchup is interesting, because obviously he's obviously a fantastic trainer, because a lot of good fighters, Andy Lee, just one of many who praise about him.
Mm.
But it's a total, it'd be interesting what he does with him, because there's a total style shift, I would feel, with how Sugar Hill would want to train him, because the Kronk really... he's all off a solid jab.
Talk about Thomas Hearns and what they did with him, remember? Very long welterweight.
Thomas had a whipping jab, but now and again, he would step. See, to step in, you've got to turn that front foot in a little bit to add the power, which means you go off the balls of your feet. Now, Tommy Hearns could move, but he literally had fast hands and whipping shots, but his feet were quite relatively static, relatively.
Mm. But Whittaker's arm, because he
fleety.
Moves more. Yeah, exactly.
Obviously, you adapt as you become a professional, because we're all fleety as amateurs. And because that's what you, because it's 3 rounds, you have to be quick. But you see the way he is. You know, he sort of does that little drunken master thing, doesn't he, with his feet sometimes, Whittaker. He has that sort of dancing background, so it's unorthodox. So to get him to be structured behind a solid jab, if that's what they're going to do, which that's what you would think they do, because that's the Kronk way, then it'd be interesting on how they're going to change him. And do they do it in small steps? Because, you know, when he went with Fury changed from when, no, because Sugar Hill's known for Tyson Fury now, from the Wilder fight, from the first fight where Fury was dancing around like we all knew the Fury of old, to the second fight where he went forward like a train, beyond a solid Kronk jab, we call it the Kronk jab now, a solid jab from the Kronk style, and dominating, bullied Wilder. But he's an experienced boxer who's a maverick. Now, maybe Whittaker will prove to be that case, but it'd be interesting to see how they do it this early in his career. So even saying automatically, it's a great move getting Sugar Hill on board, and I'm sure it is, because he has a wealth of knowledge. But I still think, you know, if there's going to be a massive change in his style, it's a risky move potentially.
How does Whittaker's, obviously it'll take 2 years for him to, year and a half, 2 years for him to get to that stage with Joshua Boatse and Craig Richards and Anthony Yard and Callum Smith and all those other guys at 175 pounds are at. But is it good to have those 6-7 names for him to target so he can meet them at the right time, as you know, in a couple of years' time?
They might not be there. that's the truth of it, you know. Mm. But you know, the climb of the boxing, like it changes like overnight, doesn't it? They haven't been around for 2 minutes, them guys. They've been around for a while, and they've been around that level for a while, you know. So you tend to think, how long have they got left? So 2, possibly 3 years, more likely, to be fair, with Whittaker, though everyone's moved faster than what they should be now. Galal Yafai is a prime example of that. But it's, if they move in quick, you've got to be careful because these are experienced operators. If they do what they should do and take their time with him and promote him and literally drag that silver medal everywhere you go, because you've got to promote him. He's an Olympic finalist. You've got to promote him to the max and say he's got to be the future.
He's a target.
Say he'd be the future of boxing, but you can still match him relatively comfortable and safe and give him the learning fights. That's important, though. Give him the learning fights. Not every fight's got to be a walkover, but they've got to be the right fights at the right time.
Yeah, and I think he's signed with the right people as well, and because he'll get big promotion on Sky Sports. And they've signed up a group of Olympians, haven't they? Lauren Price, the women's gold medalist.
Yeah,
I think she's
Karras as well, you know, and
Caroline Dubois. It's a great group of fighters, you know.
It's a massive thing, and Sky's still now and can't see that change for a while. Still the biggest platform to be for boxing, so you have, you know, being on there is going to really help your development quick. But also with that is the added pressure. Certainly with Boxer being a relatively new promotional company, is that they're looking for that flag bearer for their promotion. He might be it, but not yet.
Well, from one silver Olympic medalist to a gold medalist, Galal Yafai, fresh off his second victory, but his first fight in America on the undercard of Katie Taylor, Amanda Serrano. Galal Yafai joined me to speak about what's happening in his life, and it might even include a little bit of classical music.
Great for me, obviously, getting a win, stoppage win. I remember trying to enjoy it, thinking I need to enjoy this, you know, MSG New York, but I couldn't enjoy it, really. I was just thinking about fighting. I didn't care where it was. My brothers were telling me, to MSG, you need to enjoy it, but as you know, before, as you probably interviewed before, he can't really enjoy it. Fight week, but I'm glad it's done now, and I got a win, and yeah, it's a box ticked off.
I mean, you absolutely destroyed him. Did you think it had all happened a bit too quickly by the time you got out of the ring?
Yeah, it was. I expected it to be a tougher fight, you know. He was experienced. He'd been in with the likes of Brian Veloria and Rodriguez, the bantamweight. So I thought, yeah, he's quite experienced. He's not just gonna fall. But yeah, he was easier than I thought, which I was quite glad with, to be fair.
Did you feel the history of being in that occasion, of being on that occasion, of being involved in such a huge event?
A little bit. Probably not as much as looking back now. At the time, I just try and just block it all out and just think of, I'm in a fight, I've got to win, I need to look good, that's it. It could be fighting in my garden, yeah. I need to win. It could be a little tournament back in GB in the middle of Serbia. I don't care, I need to win. Exactly them words, I just need to win, that's it.
Does a tunnel vision come over you at that point then, and you don't really see much outside, and you're just, this is my focus, this is where I am, this is what I've got to achieve while I'm here, rather than, you know, New York, skyscrapers, Chrysler Building, Empire State Building, wow, yeah. Madison Square Garden history, do you go into a tunnel vision then?
Yeah, definitely, and I think that's my personality as well, like, yeah, it's great that I get to box on these massive bills, but I think if I sit there and admire it, I think it's going to only make me not perform as well, get roared by the occasion. I'm just here to fight and to win. And I can enjoy them things afterwards, the fact that I fought at Madison Square Garden, the fact that I've won Olympic Games, I'm Olympic champion, these little things I can enjoy after boxing. But for now, I can't really stay in the moment and enjoy it. I've got to just keep going and going and gaining momentum and just keep winning.
So I'm looking at this. You fought in February, you fought in April. So June, are you going to be out next?
I don't know. I'll probably have a little rest now. People keep telling me you're going to fight again. You know, you only did 2 rounds. But people don't understand, it's the camps that are really tough. You know, I've had 2 10-round camps. You know, I'm not doing like four. I know I haven't done 10 rounds, but the camps are really hard and the sparring is really hard and mentally it's really hard. So you need a little rest sometimes. And I think that's what I needed now. So hopefully, maybe July, I don't know, we'll sit down with Rob and the team and sort it out.
Tell me about Cal and Gamal. I mean, they were there in New York. I saw them at the weigh-in, I think. I didn't see them on Fight Night. They've been off the radar for a little while. They're not retiring, are they?
No, not retiring. They've been in the gym with me, training. I think they just saw a date out and things like that. But yeah, I don't know if you saw my fight, but you could see Cal in the corner, couldn't you? Cal was an assistant in the corner, so it was nice to have Cal in the corner and Gamal ringside. You know, they obviously, my brothers have been boxing a long time, so they've got a lot of experience, so it's great to have them around. But yeah, their careers aren't over yet. They'll be fighting soon, and I'll be supporting them as well.
You boxed with Ben Whitaker. He turned pro this week. How good is he? You'll know him very well. I'm not that you've sparred with him, but you'll know his boxing skills very well. He's very highly spoken of. What will he bring to the pro game?
You know what? Ben's one of the most talented boxers I've ever seen. Like, you know, up close. He's a good friend of mine. He's just a great fighter. He's a great boxer. He's naturally very, very gifted. Obviously, brilliant that he's finally signed his contract with Sky. Brilliant platform for him. He looks a part. He's a great boxer. He's at a great weight. Some people like him. Some people don't like him. I happen to be one of them that do like him. You know, he's a great lad. He's not far from me, Wolverhampton, Birmingham. And I was on Twitter yesterday, actually. It was a bit annoying, really. I saw a lot of people saying, it was like they were arguing about the Team GB lads. Oh, no, he was the best one to come out. No, he was the one to pick. And now Pat McCormack, Fraser, Galau, Ben. And it's a bit annoying, really, because we're all good mates. And it's like people playing us off against each other. It's like, oh, no, Ben's the best. Yafoy's the best. Oh, no, Pat's the best. And I just wanted to just go on there and say, listen, boys, I'm not the best. I'll leave it to these. We're all good mates. As long as we all do well, it doesn't really matter. I'm trying to be the best in my weight class. And that's hard enough. Never mind trying to be the better than Ben Whitaker or Pat McCormack.
Well, you've got the gold medal. You're a little bit older than some of the others. Cause I always forget that you're 29. I think it's great that you're 29, really, because you've got that experience as a man.
Yeah.
And you're ready for it all. And I think, of all of them, though, you'll probably challenge for a world title before any of them. I mean, Hearn's saying 2 years, isn't he?
Yeah, 2 years. You know what? It could probably be sooner. Could probably be sooner. But, you know, I can't get carried away too much. You know, I know I can mix it with the world level fighters, but it's one thing mixing it with them and it's another thing beating them. But hopefully in the next 2 years, I can hopefully become a world champion. You never know though, I might not become a world champion. It just depends how good I am. I've had 2 fights already. Hopefully I can continue.
I love his counter-punching, aggressive, come-forward southpaw style. Reminds me of all the great boxers we've got at the moment. Vasyl Lomachenko, Errol Spence, Terence Crawford when he switches, Alexander Usyk. Current champions, Julio Cesar Martinez, Artem Dalakian and Junto Nakatani. Is he going to face any of those guys?
Well, he's going to have to, isn't he, if he wants
and
to
Sonny Edwards, of course.
Sonny Edwards. Well, the three of those are punchers.
Yeah.
And one's a magician.
Yeah.
So it's a really high, it's a really great weight. You see that all
the magician is Sonny Edwards.
Sonny Edwards is the magician. He stands boxes on their heads left, right and centre. But I like Yafoy. He is a typical Yafoy. He's like all his brothers. They're really aggressive. So obviously, you know, they would walk onto shots. But he looked fantastic in New York. He really did. You know, ringside, every punch you could hear, it was sounding like a middleweight. He's got a big future ahead of him. My worry is, they're like all the time, though, because he's an Olympic gold medalist, and they're going to rush him a little bit too soon. That's the only caveat there. They should pull back a little bit because he's done 10 rounders on his debut, which is sort of De La Hoya stuff, isn't it, really?
Well, the stars kept rolling in on the show this week. And next up, I caught up
with Shakur Stevenson, who just enjoyed a fantastic victory over Oscar Valdez. And he spoke to us about Roger Gutierrez, but also that he perhaps would fight Joe Cordina if Cordina can beat Ogawa on June the 4th in Cardiff.
I think this is one of my best performances. I liked it the most. Honestly, I felt like my IQ was on a high level and I got to show how good I am. I was so good, I felt like that people don't even understand how good I was.
You started to sound like Muhammad Ali, that you put the lights out before you. if your very, very harshest critic, okay, would say one thing about that performance was, and I pretty much know what your answer is going to be, you probably could have stopped Valdez if you'd really gone for it. That's what your harshest critic would say.
Yeah, I hear y'all, but you got to understand, Valdez is a decorated fighter. He's 30-0, been in wars, and he's a great fighter, so I'm not going to take nothing away from him. I felt like I did step on the gas at times. There was times where I got to the inside and we got the fight in. I let my hands go. I stood in front of him. I wasn't just moving around and making the fight boring or any type of way like that. So I hear people, but I kind of like, I kind of just disagree because I just feel like, you know, if it was anybody else on that night, they probably would have got stopped. But I feel like just respect the Valdez.
You know, I haven't forgotten our conversation about who you... how and who you can aspire to be in the sport. Do you now go for Roger Gutierrez? Do you wait for the winner of Joe Cordina over here in Cardiff and Kenichi or Ken Ogawa? Would you come over here and fight Cordina and show your British fans your skills that pay the bills?
Yes, I would love to do that. I feel like... honestly, like, they kept talking to me about Archie Sharp. And they was like, yeah, such and such Archie Sharp. I'm like, so I've been, like, paying attention. But I know Joe Cordina. I knew him since, like, the amateurs. Like, I know. Like, I don't know him. Like, me and him don't, like, talk or nothing like that. But I know who he is. Like, I always paid attention to him. Like, as a boxer, I always seen him fight. All that kind of stuff. So I knew who he was already. And I've been telling people already. I'm like, yo, Cordina, he's the... best boxer, he would be like the best test. I would be down for that. Like, that's a big fight to me because honestly, I look at skills rather than somebody like Archie Sharp, where I don't feel like he's good. He's not a good fighter to me. He just social media talking and act like he's going to do a bunch of stuff that he really can't do. But with Joe Cordina, when I look at him, it's like I really see like a real challenge. I see a real test in front of me, because I don't take nothing away from him. He's definitely got the size. He got the skills, good jab. I would love to. I think that I beat him. Don't get me wrong. I know I beat him. I know I beat him. But it would be good just to be in front of another skillful fighter who know how to box.
And the British audience as well. Because...
I would love to fight him in front of them. I want him to build his fan base a little bit more. Like, just, you know, maybe after the fight with the guy, after he win the world title, maybe, like, do a defense or like something like that, like, where he could build his fan base, because I don't know how big he is in England. I feel like a lot of people talk to me about Archie Sharp more than they talk to me about Cordina, and I just feel like he's a way better boxer. I feel like, honestly, he should try to fight Archie Sharp just to build up a big fight with somebody like me.
Who do you think you are going to face next? Do you know yet?
Nah, I don't know. I'm hoping it's, like you said, Roger Gutierrez. I think that that will be the fight that makes the most sense. I feel like we could go back to my hometown, Newark, New Jersey. I'm the king of 130 right now, so I got the leeway where I can do stuff like that. And I feel like I should be fighting Roger Gutierrez in my hometown.
So Shakur Stevenson, he's so bright. He's so on it. And I love the fact that, like you said, if Joe Cordina can beat Kenichi Ogawa on the, was it 4th of June at the Motorpoint Arena, you fought there, haven't you?
It's my home. The home that Barry built. Not Calzaghe.
Exactly. And it'll be raucous in there. Joe's loved in Wales, isn't he? And he's just reaching that moment now. If he can beat Kenichi Ogawa, who's a very tough, kind of
Japanese warrior, come forward fighter, very straight punches, got the hooks on him. Joe's a clever fighter in the fact he's coming down a weight. He'll have that bit more power, won't he? And as Shaka said, let's have Joe one more fight, and then he's got a bit of a name for himself, and I'll come over and fight in front of 20,000. How good would that be?
For a Welsh boxing man. And Cardiff, you forget, because Cardiff hasn't such a... Cardiff, if I get my words right, Cardiff haven't had a world champion for 25 years. And the last guy to win a world title from Cardiff...
Mr. Jones.
Was me. 25 years, same weight as Joe Cardina, so I think it bodes well for Joe. Plus, he's named Joe. Our best boxer we ever produced was Joe Calzaghe. And he's big for the weight, and he has loads of skill. The only thing I say about Joe Cardina, the worry, is that they're trying to make him a little bit more of a power puncher. Rightly so, to sell him, to make him more marketable. But in this fight, he needs to go back to that amateur pedigree, the magic that he had, the beautiful movements.
And be smart.
The spinning on a sixpence. Let this guy run at you, make him miss, make him pay. Just win.
I agree.
Like Stevenson would do.
Yeah, I agree. Agar was a very tough fighter.
It's a hard fight.
But he's not complex, is he?
No, but it looks simple. So to train for him is easy. But when you get in there, to train for him tactically is easy. But to get it right on the night when you've got him running at you, hitting you everywhere and hurting you, and also that Japanese instinctive, just pure aggression, they just don't stop. The engines of Japanese fighters are better than anything. And he will give it to Joe 120%. He'll be on Joe from the offset, but Joe has a little bit of magic to his work, and I expect him to win.
I agree. I mean, I spoke to Joe for the show, didn't I? It was about a week ago, I think it was, so a couple of weeks ago. What I found fascinating was he started doing his nutrition right, and he was weighing in at 132 pounds, like a couple of days before the weigh-in. Now, I don't know whether this is talk, but he's very believable on that. So it wasn't difficult to get to 130, he said.
I would say boxers are the biggest liars in the world. Listen, you have to be to get where you come from. So they lie about two things: money and weight. So it's a struggle, but it's also a struggle, mate. It should be a struggle, mate. Joe Calzaghe said, if you don't struggle to make the weight, you're in the wrong weight, and that's got to be true. So it's hard for him, but he's making it without putting himself in any sort of danger, and he's big for the weight. But that won't be what wins him the fight. Ability, boxing brain and skills. If he wins, that'll be what wins in the fight.
Finally, back to Shaka on this section.
No, okay. Back to Cardina.
No. But wouldn't that be amazing to see those two fight in the UK, mate, though, at the end of the year or early next? It would be amazing. And it's possible, isn't it? If Shaka hasn't gone up by then. I think he's going to fight Roger Gutierrez next, as he says,
yes,
to try and clean up the division. I think he will clean up the division, because that move up to lightweight for him is stacked with seven amazing fights, isn't it? From Vasyl Lomachenko. As I said to him there, I think the most technical fight on earth right now is Shaka Stevenson against Vasyl Lomachenko. It's like a physical chess match, even though I favour Shaka to win that handily on points.
Handily?
Yeah, handily.
Against Lomachenko?
Yeah, but eight rounds to four. Bigger man, naturally.
Is he a bigger man, naturally?
Yeah, he's 5'9". He is 5'9".
That's 5'9", but I mean, but physically, naturally, because Lomachenko's been he's a featherweight for his first Olympic cycle, but he's been a lightweight for a long time, as the amateurs, which is obviously a few pound lighter than the professional weight, but still, he's been comfortable at that weight.
Vasyl more skilled than Shaka?
It's a different skill.
But that's what I...
It's a different skill set. You're planning on Lomachenko getting old.
Because
the older you get, the longer you have apart from fights, it's not a friend to you. No, because you've got a longer time, your body getting... You put on weight and you lose your skills as you get older. The skills start to erode a little bit more and you just can't get that fire back. That's the only reason. That's the only thing why I think that Lomachenko would be going underdog for that fight. But you've got to say, Lomachenko at his best is a match for anybody. So,
he is.
So even though Stevenson might beat him, might be enough.
Yeah.
To say handily,
if I
could reach you, I'd slap you on the head again. Yeah. Like, you're too far away.
Yeah. But well, I say handily. Yeah, I do think handily. That's my opinion.
That is my opinion. Big conviction,
and I'll tell
my friend.
You why. Because he's got fearlessness on his side. That might be the fight where he goes into the trenches. That, for me, is the fight he should have before Tank Davis, if Tank Davis is still around, if he hasn't imploded.
But this is that Mayweather thing we talked about, the Mayweather recipe, exactly, where he has that belief and that fearlessness, the word that you said that I can't say, that he genuinely believes that no one on the planet can beat him.
Yeah.
No, don't just think it. He knows it.
Yeah.
Whether
yeah.
it's true or not, another
yeah.
thing.
Yeah.
But, like,
yeah.
no, because Mayweather had that with Diego Corrales. different sort of setup, but he thought that, you know, that was a fight that was going to cause him trouble, and he walked it.
Final one, right? We've got to go to break, and we're going to talk MMA next. Final one.
Yes.
Do we think Shakur's going to be number one pound for pound in a couple of years' time?
Oh,
he'll
yes.
be 26 then.
100%.
Yeah, I think so.
He is going to carry the world boxing on his back for years.
Yeah. Pernell Whitaker, Floyd Mayweather, Sugar Ray Leonard, Pernell Whitaker, Floyd Mayweather, Shakur Stevenson. There's a lineage, isn't there? I think I might have missed someone out in the middle there, but the great boxers that we've seen.
For sheer skill. And yes,
sheer
yes, of
skill.
Course, yeah.
And adaptability for so many styles.
But he has that magic of his sellability, if that's a word.
It is.
He has that.
Saleability?
Whatever, I don't care. I've been punched in the head for 25 years. But he has that in him. He hasn't done it yet, but he has that something about him that can, and I think will, transcend the sport.
We'll keep the very best to last this week. I was joined on the show by boxing royalty. Yep, the legendary heavyweight, Larry Holmes, arguably with the best jab in the sport. And of course, one of the all-time greats. Barry and I had a chat about how great he really was. Whenever we talk about the best jab or the greatest heavyweights of all time, you're in the conversation in the top five. Mm-hmm. Your jab is arguably the greatest ever in boxing. You know?
For a long time, and that's one of the things that I wanted to learn. I wanted to learn how to fight. I wanted to learn how to jab. And, you know, I tell these guys in here, now, learn your jab. And I even try to show them and demonstrate the jab. And they get it when they understand it. And that's what boxing needs.
I think it was just before Ali passed away, and you were in one of your rumbustious moods. Yeah. Mm. And I asked you about Ali, about him. Was he the greatest? And obviously he fought you very late in his career. You didn't want to fight him. As you say, you spent 4 years around him. He'd been a tutor to you in some ways.
And one thing about it, I don't want to do it. I don't ever want to take away from somebody's fame and whatever, say they're the greatest or they're not the greatest. You know, Ali was one of the greatest fighters of all time that I met. I had the pleasure of meeting. I had the pleasure of eating his food.
Yep.
Running on his ground. And I had that pleasure. And then when people say, what about Muhammad Ali? I try my best to explain it, but it's unexplainable because he did so much of everything.
The day I got you, though, you were in a rumbustious mood. You said, the greatest? You said he was the stupidest. And there was a reason for that, wasn't there?
Yeah.
You were thinking back to him.
Well, you know.
You using him as a punch bag and him not punching back in some of those sessions.
Exactly. You know, you don't go out like that. If you can go out standing on your feet. Just like me, when I fought Mike Tyson, I shouldn't have came out of retirement. I came out of retirement and I fought Mike Tyson and I lost. He stopped me. And so, therefore, if I'd have kept doing that, I'd be talking to like that. So, therefore, you quit while you're ahead.
Why did you come back against Mike Tyson? And why do fighters do that? Why are they drawn back?
It's the money, isn't it? It's the money. If I give you $1,000, maybe not $1,000, if I give you some money right now, you probably take me. Come on, Larry, I will give it a shot.
I don't think I would with you, Larry, because that jab would pop straight into my face and I'd probably be lying on the floor.
Yeah, but if I tell you, I ain't going to hit you that hard.
Well, I still don't believe you. but I might. I might. I know what you mean. You were in an era. Let me take you to that era. An era of extraordinary fighters. When you look back on it, can you believe there were maybe 10 of you who are of the quality, perhaps, and I'll come to it slowly, of one fighter today, of Tyson Fury, who just dominates everyone. He's head and shoulders above everyone. But there were 10 of you at the time, weren't there?
Yeah, listen, every corner of your turn, you know, you're gonna get one of them. You're going to get Muhammad Ali. You're going to get Joe Frazier. You're going to get Kenny Norton. You're going to get Ernie Shavers. You're going to get Jerry Cooney. I mean,
you've got George Foreman in there.
George Foreman in there. And we threw all these guys together.
Yeah.
And the fighters of the day, I don't knock them. I don't want to knock them. But they couldn't stand up against us.
So if you could have fought him, if you could have fought him 6 years earlier, for example, 6-7 years earlier, when you were in your reign, do you think it would have been a different fight?
And a new heavyweight champion of the world, Larry Holmes. That's how they need to call it.
So he's always going to be critical of this era, because every great era, and that probably was the Halcyon era, you know, with Holmes, with Ali, Frazier, Foreman, you don't need their surnames, Norton, you know, Shavers, Cooney. It was an incredible era. Like
Ron Lyle, he was a superstar today, but exactly. Back then he was, amazing fights.
But not unexpected that Larry says, Wilder, Joshua, Fury. I think Fury could have lived in that era. And as he said, he'd like to see more from Joshua. We haven't seen him yet. I know you disagree with that, but I know what he means.
I'm a fan of Joshua.
So am I.
I think we've seen what he has. I don't think you say we haven't seen the best of him, or we haven't seen what he can do. We've seen what he can do. He just needs to get it right, in the right order. At the minute, Joshua doesn't know what he...
Was that down to his training team in the end?
Well, that's down to...
That fight with Usyk, I mean. That's the one we're all surprised by.
Since he got knocked out by Ruiz, his confidence went to shot. Yeah. Rightly so, because he ran out of ideas. Because he hadn't boxed all his life, he didn't know what to do. And that's okay, that happens. So they did what you should do. Teach a fighter new skills and work on your strengths. So they did that. But with doing that, you open the fighter's mind. He becomes a thinking fighter, which... is brilliant.
And he was naturally an enforcer before, wasn't he?
Being a thinking fighter is fantastic, except when you miss with a jab, when you're not a thinking fighter, you just keep throwing. If someone says in the corner, go and hit with Joshua, you go and hit him with a jab. And all he do is go up there, you think, I'm going to hit you with this jab, whatever I do, and he runs right through you with that jab. But now he's a thinking fighter, he throws a few jabs and misses, and he tells himself,
he reverts to type.
I'm not doing that again. Yeah. No, he goes, I'm not doing it. And he stops throwing the jab. Or when he gets hit before Dillian White, say that first fight, the fight with Dillian White, he gets hurt. He didn't care, because all he was thinking about, I got to destroy you. But now he's starting to think. Now when he gets hurt, you can see him go, oh, I don't want to take another one of those, which is what you want a fighter to do. But by opening his mind and trying to make him a better all-round fighter, they've taken away his magic, that rawness, that strength. The destroyer he once was, that made him a world champion, that's been taken away. But they did the right things, but they've got the wrong result. I'm not a trainer, of course, but this is just my opinion. I think you sometimes, you've got to know what you're dealing with. With someone like Fury, you can always give him new tricks, because he can think on his feet, because he's boxed since he was a baby.
Mm.
And Joshua hasn't. He's a better athlete, but he's not a better natural boxer. So I think that's the reason why I think we've seen what Joshua can do, but he can be better. But I understand, but go back to Larry Holmes, because I've been aggressing all night about different stuff. If go back to Larry Holmes, I understand why, because technically they were better fighters. I feel sorry for Larry Holmes, because he sort of caught two eras. The 70s was the best era of heavyweight boxing. The 90s was the second best, in my opinion. But the 70s was the best.
Well, you're talking now with Tyson, Mike Tyson, Evander Holyfield, Riddick Bowe, Lennox Lewis.
It was a great era. It goes on. You know,
and it's an era that Tommy we Morrison, remember. It was loads but it's of an them. Era we remember as young men. We saw them all. Yeah, that's what I mean. But I was a little baby when those guys were fighting in the 70s.
I was 37. Even the 90s, at the time, you don't realize how good it is until you look back. And that happens with everything, of course, in every sport. But I tend to think that they were the two eras. But the 80s, even though we had Tyson in the 80s, and the end of the 80s got good, but really, it was sort of they're the forgotten generation of heavyweights. Actually, they were decent. Burbick and the like, Bone Crusher Smith, Cal the Cat Williams. They were all good fighters.
Yeah,
but they sort of got lost in between two great eras, and so Larry sort of caught the both of them.
He was old when he was old when he lost to Spinks twice, and he was old when he lost to Mike Tyson.
Yeah, and if he would have been boxing 5 years earlier, he would have been in the running with.
But he went to 48-0 as a heavyweight. It's unbelievable, isn't it? If he'd gone away at 40,
and then got robbed. Let's make a bones ball. Because Michael Spink, the first fight, got absolutely turned over. I think I would say, though, if anyone listening, if you want to see Larry Holmes, watch Larry Holmes versus Ken Norton. And if you don't want to watch the whole fight, just fast forward to the 15th round. The 15th round, and these two giants are toe-to-toe. That's why he looks at this year and says, they weren't as good as us.
It's an absolute pleasure to have had a stellar cast on Fight Night this week and to have enjoyed the company of Mr. Barry Jones with me in the studio for a full 3 hours. You've been listening to the Fight Night podcast. Keep on subscribing. We're live every Saturday night, of course. Enjoy the fights, and we'll see you next time.
Tired of ads interfering with your favorite sports podcasts? Good news. Ad-free listening is available on Amazon Music for all the music plus top podcasts included with your Prime membership. Stay ahead of the game by downloading the Amazon Music app for free or go to amazon.com/sportsadfree. That's amazon.com/sportsadfree to catch up on the latest episodes without the ads.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.